Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango.
This is a podcast where we are slowly but surely working currently through the story of Words of Radiance, the story of the Cosmere overall, you know, but specifically the Stormlight Archive and right now Words of Radiance. Before we jump into the episode, I sometimes remember to do this and sometimes don't. We have a Discord server. You guys can join that. Link is in the episode description. Also, we have a Twitter account, at SpeakStormlight on Twitter. Mango.
No.
Last time, we had two chapters we covered. In one of them, Dalinar, his visions were, like, revealed to the entire court.
Oh, and then Wit left.
Yeah, Wit left. Wit said some really sketchy shit about how, like, our goals align right now, but if they didn't, I would let you die in a heartbeat.
I
would
cry. Well, I mean, he didn't, like, leave yet, right? He has one more appearance.
Yeah, but it's the epilogue.
Oh, okay.
He's left the story.
So he's gone.
He's gone. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, not cool, but...
Yeah, no, he's... Wit is getting the hell out of Dodge. Smart for him. He's heading somewhere else. That's very fun. And then we also had a Kaladin chapter where Kaladin was just, you know, on a little bit of an expedition with some other peeps, and, you know, Shallan and Adolin and Dalinar were all there, and, you know, Shallan was like, hey, you're an asshole. And he was like, yeah, but at least I'm not a bitch. And she was like, yeah, you're that too.
Basically, Adolin was trying hard to say something nice to him, and he just made fun of him back.
Mm.
And Shallan was like, hey, you should, like, not do that.
That's not nice. Yeah. And then Adolin's like, Kaladin's like, Yeah. Adolin's an asshole. Why do I recognize that carpenter? And he brings him up a couple times throughout the chapter, and then he realizes, oh, shit, it's because that carpenter is from Sadeus's camp. They are on a bridge, and Dalinar and Adolin are on one side of the bridge, and Shallan and Kaladin are in the middle, and the carpenter pulls a lever to collapse the bridge, and Kaladin and Shallan fall.
And that's where we left off. And the first sentence of this one is that he tries to pull some Stormlight and there is none.
We will get into right now with chapter 69. We're children. Chapter 69. Yeah. We're both children. I also laughed at it. Chapter 69, nothing. The epigraph reads, race is captive. He cannot leave the system he now inhabits. His destructive potential is therefore inhibited.
I'm sorry, racist captive?
No, race is captive.
Race
was mentioned in the first letter last book that Hoid wrote to the person who's now writing back. Race is like the person that Hoid is like, hey, this guy's a real fucking problem and we need to deal with him. Mm-hmm. And this person is saying, look, race can't leave the system. He's captive. It's going to be okay.
So he's not racist.
He's not. Well, I don't think race is racist. He doesn't strike me as the racist kind.
So he might be a problem, but at least he's not racist.
Yeah. At least he's not racist. And Frost doesn't seem to think that he's a problem. This chapter has Shallan's symbol. It starts in Kaladin's POV. And I'm going to read from the book here. It reads, as the bridge fell out from beneath him, Kaladin reached for Stormlight. Nothing. He caught a glimpse of Shallan and several men in blue uniforms falling. Kaladin thrashed for the Stormlight. He would not die this way. The sky was his. The winds were his. The chasms were his. He would not. Syl screamed. In that moment, he got a breath of Stormlight, life itself. He crashed into the ground at the bottom of the chasm and all went black. What have you done? The distant voice sounded like rumbling thunder. Kaladin gasped. Suddenly, his entire body hurt. He lay on his back, staring upward. Syl? No, that was sunlight. Kaladin groaned and sat up. I got some Stormlight right at the end, he thought. I survived. But that scream! It had sounded too much like the scream he'd heard when touching the duelist's shardblade in the arena. He gets to his feet and runs into Shallan. He lies about how he survived, and Shallan explains how the bridge collapsed. They search the bridge wreckage and find several bodies, but don't see Dalinar or Adolin. Kaladin thinks that he somehow saved Shallan. Kaladin says that there was a Parshendi attack right before the bridge fell, and that means that Dalinar probably retreated. Kaladin tells Shallan that they may have been rescued by a windspren, as in folktales. Kaladin and Shallan discuss how they will survive and what dangers they may face, the worst of which is a high storm that is due the following night. They decide to set out immediately for the war camps.
Is it only the two of them that survived? All the other guys died?
They're all dead.
Yikes. Were they any of Kaladin's friends?
It was only, I don't believe there were any Bridgemen, he doesn't say. I don't think he says Bridgemen. I think they're just soldiers.
He would have said if they were Bridgemen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't care about them.
And if they were Bridgemen, they weren't, like, important named Bridgemen.
They might have been other Bridgemen, but not Kaladin's Bridgemen.
Yeah. We cut to Shallan's POV. Shallan is both annoyed and pleased to find Kaladin survived, and thinks that she probably saved both of them somehow. As they walk, she notices she notices how much plant life there is in the chasm. She makes a quip about how Kaladin is about Kaladin as they walk, which annoys him. And I'm gonna read from the book here. Storms, she said. That was supposed to be lighthearted. What would it take to make you relax, Bridge Boy? I guess I'm just a, what was it again? A hateful man. I haven't seen any proof to the contrary. That's because you don't care to look, Light Eyes. Everyone beneath you is just a plaything. What? Where would you get that idea? It's obvious. To whom? To you only? When have you seen me treat someone of a lesser station like a plaything? Give me one example. When I was imprisoned for doing what any Light Eyes would have been applauded for doing. And that was my fault? It's the fault of your entire class. Each time one of you is defrauded, enslaved, beaten, or broken, the blame rests upon all of you who support it, even indirectly. Oh, please, she said. The world isn't fair. What a huge revelation. Some people in power abuse those they have power over. Amazing. When did this start happening? I think that you're just looking for excuses. Yes, you've been mistreated. I admit it. But I think you're the one who cares about eye color, that it's just easier for you to pretend that every Light Eyes is abusing you because of your status. Have you ever asked yourself if there's a simpler explanation? Could it be that people don't like you, not because you're dark-eyed, but because you're just a huge pain in the neck? He snorted. No, you're not wiggling out of this. You don't get to imply that I'm abusing my station, then walk off without a response. You did this earlier with Adolin, now with me. What is your problem? You want a better example of you playing with people beneath you? Kaladin asked. Fine. You stole my boots. You pretended to be someone you weren't and bullied a dark-eyed guard you'd barely met. Is that a good enough example of you playing with someone you saw as beneath you? She stopped in her tracks. He was right. Kaladin sighs and tells her that from what he's seen, she isn't as bad as the others and is willing to leave it at that. Shallan says that she might be an insensitive rich woman, but Kaladin can still be mean and offensive. Kaladin doesn't seem to care and says that he's this way because of the Light Eyes and has no responsibility for it. Shallan says that he'll always be an intolerant and spiteful man, that he must be a very lonely one. Kaladin says he's reconsidering whether she's not as bad as the others. Shallan accuses him of not having liked her from the start, and Kaladin says that he hates how she's lying to everyone she meets, that being around her makes him want to claw his face off. He cut off as a scraping noise grew louder. Kaladin immediately put his hand over his improvised sphere lantern, plunging them into darkness. She stumbled toward him in the darkness, grabbing his arm. He was annoying, but he was also there. I guess having a shouting match in an echoing network of chasms was not terribly wise. Yeah. It's getting closer, isn't it? Yeah. So, run? The scraping seemed just beyond the next turn. Yeah, Kaladin said, pulling his hand off his spheres and charging away from the noise. And that is the end of that chapter. Shallan is learning a little bit, I think.
Learning what?
I think that he has a point of like, hey, you met a dark-eyed guard and immediately just started to fuck with him. And that's not very cool. And she's like, okay, yeah, I guess that's true. Because she kind of hit him with the like, I'm not racist, you're the racist. You know? Like, you're the one that cares about race, not me. But Shallan obviously comes from a place of privilege and just has not been able to, like... She comes from a place of privilege, but is not able to see that. And he assumes that she has come from more of a place of privilege than she really has just by the nature of her station.
And she assumes that just because she had a terrible past that she doesn't have privilege. That's a very interesting narrative that definitely represents stuff in real life.
It's some art from Shallan's notebook. I will read the text reads, a variety of vine bud that is unknown to me. It is difficult to study, so it mostly clings to the stone above the water lines. It blooms a tremendous flower of bright leaves, and the vines grow to be dense, dozens of feet long. The vines appear to seek not just water, but others of their own kind, creating the occasional tangle in the chasms above. The volume seems incredibly elastic, elastic. When withdrawn, both the length and diameter nearby compress more than any variety I've ever seen. Anyways, it's just some drawings of like what it looks like inside the chasm. A standard, though very large variety of grows here. Yeah, it's just some art about what it looks like inside a chasm.
I always forget that it's like rock and ocean looking.
Without the water.
I always forget that.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining like plain desert with no plants ever.
Chapter 70 is titled From a Nightmare. It has Kaladin symbol, and the epigraph reads, "Whether this was Tanavast's design or not, millennia have passed without Race taking the life of another of the 16. While I mourn for the great suffering Race has caused, I do not believe we could hope for a better outcome than this."
16.
Another of the 16. And I will remind you in the first letter, what did Hoyt say? Hoyt said, "You need only look at the aftermath of his brief visit to Cell to see proof of what I say. In case you have turned a blind eye to that disaster, know that Aeona and Sky are both dead and that which they held has been splintered, presumably to prevent anyone from rising up to challenge Race." So, and Tanavast is another name for honor, which has come up throughout these books, is the Stormfather has interchangeably referred to Kaladin as the child of Tanavast and the child of honor.
Clearly, I don't know. It's like, you know, Tanavast is like a god, right? Wait, how many gods did you say there were?
I don't know if I ever said how many there were, but I'll tell you this, 16. And it's mentioned in here, without Race taking the life of another of the 16.
Yeah. Okay.
And Aeona and Sky were two of the other ones that were killed.
Yeah. So we know there are at least three gods dead.
Yes, at least.
Is Race another word for, what's his face?
Race, are you asking if it's referring to Odium?
Yeah.
Race is referring to Odium in the same way that Tanavast refers to Honor, yes.
Okay. Okay. Wait, but that means that, so if, is Odium and Honor their official names, or is Honor and Race the of like, because they have two names,
yeah,
clearly at least two names, so I'm like, if
yeah,
like Honor is like the kind of symbolic name, but Tanavast is like more of a like name, and I'm trying to just figure out whether Odium or Race is the symbolic name or the name.
Yeah, so I can tell you. So only characters like Hoyd and Frost would know Honor as Tanavast and Race as, or Odium as Race. And Honor would have known Odium as Race. And Odium would have known Tanavast as Race, but like only very
specific people.
So they're
more personal names.
Yes.
So Honor and Odium is like their official, like,
yes,
godly names, and then the Tanavast and Race is their like more personal level names.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, because we're never going to cover it on this podcast, Aeona and Sky, which were referred to in the last book, are the personal names for Devotion and Dominion.
Oh.
And they,
so Devotion is dead.
Devotion and Dominion are both dead. And their deaths are responsible in a certain way to why the events of the Book of Elantris happen.
Wait, but Devotion is the one who is in control of Warbreaker.
That's
right?
Endowment.
Oh, Endowment. Okay.
Yes. Endowment is still alive.
Okay. I was like, wait.
Yeah, there's a lot.
That doesn't make sense.
But
the Returned wouldn't exist.
The magic systems in Elantris operate the way that they do, very much because Odium killed Devotion and Dominion a long time ago. That's not what the book is about,
sad.
But like the magic has changed over time to how it works in the book because of their murder.
Because in Near Replicant,
mm-hmm,
the magic in that world is literally from an interdimensional dragon dying.
Okay.
So now I'm like, is the magic based on, like, come from the essence of the gods themselves and only exist because the gods are dead?
Well, I would say definitely that the Spren consider themselves like pieces of God.
Does it work that way in other places for other gods, though?
They don't have to be dead.
Well, I know they don't have to be dead, but I'm saying that that could be one of the systems, yeah. Is like literal, like you are getting your magic from the death of the god.
Yeah.
Because the Spren, the god doesn't have to be dead for the Spren to exist, but in other areas, it may literally be the, like, you know, like the soul or the spirit of the god that passes on the ability for magic or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not versed well enough in Elantris and the magic going on, the stuff going on around Cell to be able to give you a real answer. It's kind of the most confusing part of the Cosmere to me.
But we're gonna do that one, right?
Or was I don't that think we're gonna do Elantris.
Oh, that was the one that you said we probably would just summarize.
Yeah, that was the one where I was like, I could do this in one episode if we ever want to do it, or maybe two.
Because, you know, you think so, and I'm pretty sure that in the future Sanderson's gonna prove you wrong, and there's gonna be a lot more relevant stuff in that book than you think there is.
Yeah, he said there's going to be two more Elantris books, and I assume those are going to get way more at some point, like way more involved, but yeah, we'll cover them eventually. I'll at least explain how the magic works on Cell at some point, because that is definitely relevant to the rest of the Cosmere.
Okay.
Anyways, this chapter starts in Kaladin's POV. Kaladin and Shallan flee as they are chased by a chasm fiend. Shallan chooses a path and orders Kaladin to follow her. They stop and he realizes that she lured the chasm fiend back to their original location towards the fresh corpses for food. Shallan decides she wants to see the chasm fiend and gets close to take a look at it. It has small glowing spren around it, like the spren that follows sky eels. They leave before the chasm fiend finishes its meal.
Good, because don't watch that. Yeah.
No. We cut to Shallan's POV. Shallan lets Kaladin lead, though she tries to keep track of where she is. She grows tired now that all her stormlight is drained. Kaladin says that they should stop so they don't risk getting lost and going the wrong direction, and wants to wait until daybreak to get their bearings. Shallan pokes fun at Kaladin again, and he says that she'd be a terrible bridgeman. Then he mentions, for some reason, that she'd look too good in the traditional clothing and would distract the rest of the bridgemen. She teases him a little bit, then begins to sketch their path through the chasm, and this impresses Kaladin. Kaladin wakes her up after a short sleep before daybreak. They set out, and when the sun rises, they think they're going the right direction.
Is that why people ship the poly thing?
You'll see even more. You'll see.
Oh, boy.
Shallan asks why he tries so hard to put people off and tells him that it's too early for arguments. Then she proceeds to use big words to try and confuse him and tease him. Kaladin jogged to catch up
Kalan.
With her. Yeah, Kaladin jogged. That's
their ship name.
Yeah, sure. Kaladin jogged to catch up with her. Storms, woman. I don't know what to make of you. Preferably not a corpse. I'm surprised someone hasn't already done that. He shook his head. Kaladin asks her why she's on the Shattered Plains, and Shallan tells him that Yasna left behind work that could not be abandoned. She says that Adolin was just a bonus. Kaladin guesses that the object of her studies weren't the chrysalises that she had told the others, but the structures hidden on the plains. This bridgeman was proving himself different. Perhaps she should spend as much time wondering about this man's motives as he apparently fretted about hers. Kaladin rules out her being there for riches and reveals that he's researched her family. Then he mentions that his bridgeman had overheard her asking Adolin to get rid of the Parshendi. He says that if they got rid of the Parshendi, a lot of honest men would find themselves slaves to fill the gap. Shallan apologizes for how he was treated and makes a dumb joke about execution by axe being better because it's easier to get ahead. This joke does psychic damage to Kaladin.
Uh-huh.
Kaladin tells her that she tries too hard and that the world isn't always a sunny place. He implies that she's had it too good in life and she pushes for him to expand on it after promising not to get angry at him. All right, Kaladin said. Here it is. I can imagine how the world must appear to someone like you, growing up pampered with everything you want. To someone like you, life is wonderful and sunny and worth laughing over. That's not your fault, and I shouldn't blame you. You haven't had to deal with pain or death like I have. Sorrow is not your companion.
She literally has to deal with pain and death because of you, Kaladin.
Silence. Shallan didn't reply. How could she reply to that? What? Kaladin finally asked. I'm trying to decide how to react. You see, you just said something very, very funny. Then why aren't you laughing? Well, it isn't that kind of funny. So let me see, she said. You think I've lived a simple, happy life full of sunshine and joy, but you also imply that I've got dark, evil secrets, so you're suspicious of and even hostile to me. You tell me I'm arrogant and assume that I consider dark eyes to be playthings, but when I tell you what I'm trying to do to protect them and everyone else, you imply I'm meddling and should just leave well enough alone. Would you say that's an accurate summary of our conversations up to this point, Kaladin Stormblessed? He grimaced. Yes, I suppose. Wow. You sure do seem to know me well, particularly considering that you started this conversation by professing that you don't know what to make of me. An odd statement from someone who seems, from my perspective, to have figured it all out. Next time I'm trying to decide what to do, I'll just ask you, since you appear to understand me better than I understand myself. How about this, she said, holding his eyes. I promise solemnly and by the 10th name of the Almighty that I mean no harm to Adolin or his family. I mean to prevent a disaster. I might be wrong, and I might be misguided, but I vow to you that I am sincere. He stared into her eyes, so intense. She felt a shiver meeting that expression. This was a man of passion. I believe you, he said, and I guess that will do. Kaladin then checks their bearings and realizes that they are going the wrong direction. And that is the end of the chapter.
Of course she's not going to tell him about her dark past, but she'll definitely call him out on it.
This chapter is chapter 71, Vigil. It has Kaladin's symbol. The epigraph reads, he bears the weight of God's own divine hatred, separated from the virtues that gave it context. He is what we made him to be, old friend, and that is what he, unfortunately, wished to become. We start in Teft's POV. Teft and Sigzil sit by the chasms, waiting for Kaladin. Teft is telling Sigzil about his childhood. All right, fine, Teft said. It was some kind of cult, you see, called the Invisigers. Well, they thought if they could find a way to return the Voidbringers, then the Knights Radiant would return as well. Stupid, right? Only they knew things. Things they shouldn't. Things like what Kaladin can do. Teft thinks that it would be good if he lost all his fears in a game against Sigzil because he can't be trusted with money. They thought, Teft said, that people were more likely to manifest powers if their lives were in danger. So they'd put lives in danger. Members of their own group. Never an outsider. Bless the winds. But that was bad enough. I watched people let themselves be pushed off cliffs, watched them tied in place with a candle slowly burning a rope until it snapped and dropped a rock to crush them. It was bad, Sigzil. Awful. The sort of thing nobody should have to watch, especially a boy of 6.
Oh, this happened when he was a child.
Yeah.
Oh.
I turned them in, Teft blurted out, to the City Lord. He held a trial for them, a big one, had them all executed in the end. Never did understand that. They were only a danger to themselves. Their punishment for threatening suicide was to be killed. Nonsense, that is. Should have found a way to help them. Your parents?
So that's what he meant by everyone was dead.
Is dead because of him.
Oh.
Your parents?
Okay.
Your parents? Sigzil asked. Mother died in that rock string contraption, Teft said. She really believed, Sig, that she had it in her, you know? The powers. That if she were about to die, they'd come out in her, and she'd save herself. He tells Sigzil that he watched his father be hanged, then looks around for his flask, which he's misplaced. He looks around and sees Renarin sitting nearby. Heads up, Teft, Sigzil said, rising. Teft turned around. It was Dalinar Kolin, along with Drahi and Scar. With Moash promoted and Kaladin, well, not there, Teft had taken over daily assignments. They said he was in command now. Idiots. Bright Lord, Teft said. Adolin told me you men were coming here, the High Prince said. A rotation, I understand. Yes, sir, Teft said. Teft was just on nearly every shift. You really think he's alive out there, soldier? Dalinar asked. He is, sir, Teft said. It's not about what I or anyone thinks. He fell hundreds of feet, Dalinar said. Teft continued to stand at attention. He is going to come back, sir, Sigzil said to Dalinar. He's going to come climbing right up out of that chasm right there. It will be well if we're here to meet him. Uniforms on, spears polished. We wait on our own time, sir, Teft said. Neither of us three are supposed to be anywhere else. I didn't come to order you away from your chosen work, soldier, Dalinar said. I came to make certain you were caring for yourselves. No men are to skip meals to wait here, and I don't want you getting any ideas about waiting out during a high storm. Yes, sir, Teft said. He had used his morning meal break to put in duty here. How had Dalinar known? Good luck, soldier, Dalinar said, then continued on his way. Sir, Teft called after the High Prince. Dalinar turned back toward him. You don't believe us, Teft said. That he'll come back, I mean. He's dead, soldier. But I understand that you need to be here anyway. Well, Teft supposed that was all right, Dalinar not believing. He'd just be that much more surprised when Kaladin did return. Come on, lad. What are you doing out there? And then we cut to Kaladin's POV.
Yeah, Kaladin had an excuse for last time.
He doesn't have one for this time, and neither does Shallan.
Kaladin feels like a fool for leading them in the wrong direction. He calls out Fasil, but gets no answer. He also feels like a fool for the way he treats Shallan and for the incorrect assumptions he made about her. He compliments Shallan on her drawing ability as she sketches a more accurate map of the plains, though it is getting much closer to the next high storm. She traces a couple of the plateaus nearby by walking around them, and Kaladin notices her having a mysterious conversation with somebody. She cut off abruptly, jumping as she saw Kaladin. He found himself narrowing his eyes. That had sounded like, "Don't be silly. She's no warrior. The Knights Radiant had been soldiers, hadn't they? He didn't really know much about them." Still, Syl had seen several strange spren about. Shallan says that some of the plateaus are mirror images of others, and Kaladin says that the plains are symmetrical and that he knew that from a dream. Shallan says that she knows where the Parshendi are and the Oathgate, and that she can map all of it since the plains were not a natural forming pattern. She pretty much says since they're symmetrical, as long as she can figure out one section of them, she can then copy it for the other corners. They follow a revised path based on Shallan's map, though they have to periodically check their route, slowing down their escape. Kaladin occasionally shouts up from the chasm to try to get the attention of Alethi scouts, but no one answers. "Syl," he yelled. "Syl, please! Are you there? Anywhere?" He trailed off. "I still don't know," he said more softly. "Is this a punishment? Or is it something more? What is wrong?" No reply. Shallan rejoined him and they continued to walk. She tries to engage with him, but he's in too much of a mood to react. He says that he's killed them by getting them lost, and she says that she would have made the same mistake. She tells him that he can't blame himself for everything. "It's my fault." "You are really intent on beating yourself up, aren't you?" His father had said the same thing time and time again. It was who Kaladin was. Did they expect him to change? "We'll be fine," Shallan said. "You'll see." That darkened his mood further. "You still think I'm too optimistic, don't you?" "It's not your fault. I'd rather be like you. I'd rather not have lived the life I have. I would that the world was only full of people like you, Shallan Devar. People who don't understand pain? Oh, all people understand pain. That's not what I'm talking about. It's the sorrow," Shallan said softly, "of watching a life crumble, of struggling to grab it and hold on, but feeling hope become stringy sinew and blood beneath your fingers as everything collapses." "Yes. The sensation. It's not sorrow, but something deeper. Of being broken. Of being crushed so often and so hatefully that emotions become something that you can only wish for. If only you could cry, because then you'd feel something. Instead, you feel nothing. Just haze and smoke inside, like you're already dead." He stopped in the chasm. She turned to look to him. "The crushing guilt of being powerless, of wishing they'd hurt you instead of those around you, of screaming and scrambling and hating as those you love are ruined, popped like a boil, and you have to watch their joy seeping away while you can't do anything. They break the ones you love and not you, and you plead, 'Can't you just beat me instead?'" "Yes," he whispered. Shallan nodded. "Yes, it would be nice if nobody in the world knew of those things, Kaladin Stormblessed. I agree, with everything I have." He saw it in her eyes, the anguish, the frustration, the terrible nothing that clawed inside and sought to smother her. She knew. It was there, inside. She had been broken. Then she smiled. Oh, storms. She smiled anyway. It was the single most beautiful thing he'd seen in his entire life.
"Aww."
"How?" he asked. She shrugged lightly. "Helps if you're crazy. Come on, I do believe we're under a slight time constraint." She started down the chasm. He stood behind, feeling drained, and oddly brightened. He felt like he understood. Something. He didn't know what. The chasm just seemed a little brighter. "Tien always did that to me," he thought, "even on the darkest day." Aww. He eventually jogged after Shallan. That is why people ship the polyamory
thing. Okay, I see it.
She continues to try and cheer him up, making light of the situation in any way that she can think of. They take turns listing reasons for why they're glad to be stuck in the chasms and about to die horribly when the high storm rolls in. I'm glad to be down here," he said, "because at least it was me and not one of my men who fell." She eyed him. "You're not very good at this." "Sorry, I meant that I'm glad to be down here because when we get out, everyone would cheer me for being a hero for rescuing you." "Better," Shallan said, "except for the fact that I do believe that I am the one rescuing you." He glanced at her map. Point. Kaladin does something wonderful. He makes a terrible pun. He grinned at her. "Oh, storms," she said. "You don't actually expect that to count. That was terrible." "I know. Sorry, my mother would be disappointed." "She didn't like wordplay?" "No, she loved it. She'd just be mad I tried to do it when she wasn't around to laugh at me." Shallan smiled. "I am glad we're down here, because by now Adolin will be worried sick about me, so when we get back, he'll be ecstatic. He might even let me kiss him in public." Adolin. Right. That dampened his mood. Shallan and Kaladin settle down so that...
Shallan and Okay. So it's just this chapter that makes it all. Okay.
It kind of continues a little bit. It continues out of this chapter.
It makes sense now.
Shallan and Kaladin settle down so that she can draw out more of the map. Then Kaladin called up out of the chasm again. Hey, up there. Anyone? We're down here and we're making bad puns. Please save us from ourselves. Shallan chuckled. Kaladin smiled, then started as he actually heard something echoing back. Was that a voice or... Wait. A trumping sound, like a horn's call, but overlapping itself. It grew louder, washing over them. Then an enormous skittering mass of carapace and claws crashed around the corner. Chasm Fiend. Kaladin's mind panicked, but his body simply moved. He snatched Shallan by the arm, pulling her into a run. Kaladin pulled her after him and did not look back. It was almost upon them. He'd never have imagined something so large being so quick. He whipped Shallan in front of him and thrust her into a fissure in the wall. As a shadow loomed over him, he threw himself into the fissure, shoving Shallan backward. The chasm fell silent. Kaladin could hear only Shallan's panting and his own heartbeat. Slowly, Kaladin twisted about, putting his back to Shallan. She held him from behind, and he could feel her tremble. The Chasm Fiend. Where was it? Shallan gasped, arms tightening around his waist. He looked up. There, higher up in the crack, a large, inhuman eye watched them. A large claw slammed against the side of the hole, trying to force its way in. The claw dug at the hole, and then the head withdrew. It's waiting, Shallan whispered. You sound proud of it, Kaladin snapped. A little. How long do you suppose until... It was getting dark. Not sunset yet, but getting close. 2 hours, maybe? A crashing tempest of carapace charged down the chasm. Kaladin jumped back, pressing against Shallan again as the Chasm Fiend tried to get one of its legs into the fissure. The leg was still too large. The Chasm Fiend withdrew again. It stopped just down the chasm. He could hear it settling down to watch. So? Shallan said. We wait? He could imagine staying in here until the waters came crashing through the chasms. He'd survived a storm once, barely, and here it would be far different. Smash them into walls, boulders. It would be a very, very bad way to die. His grip tightened on his spear. The Chasm Fiend didn't leave. Minutes passed. Finally, Kaladin made his decision. He moved to step forward. What are you doing? Shallan hissed. She tried to hold him back. When I'm out, run the other way. Don't be stupid. I'll distract it. Once you're free, I'll lead it away from you, then escape. We can meet back up. Liar. He twisted about. You can get back to the war camps on your own. I can't. You have information that needs to get to Dalinar. I don't. I have combat training. I might be able to get away from the thing after distracting it. You couldn't. If we wait here, we both die. Do you need more logic than that? I hate logic, she whispered. Always have. We don't have time to talk about it. You can't do this. I can. Who knows? Maybe I'll get in a lucky hit. Get ready. Please, don't leave me down in these chasms alone. He smiled wryly. Is it really this hard for you to let me win one single argument? Yes, she said. No, I mean storms. Kaladin, it will kill you. He gripped his spear. The way things had been going with him lately, perhaps that was what he deserved. Apologize to Adolin for me. I actually kind of like him. He's a good man, not just for a light eyes, just a good person. I've never given him the credit he deserves. Kaladin, it has to happen, Shallan. At least, she said, take this. Take what? This, Shallan said. Then she summoned a shard blade. And that is where we will leave off for the night.
What? She's just gonna do that.
Well, he's gonna have a better chance at fighting it with a shard blade.
Well, yeah, but she just revealed herself. What?
At least take this. Take what? This. Then she summoned a shard blade. Next week, Kaladin will fight a chasm fiend, armed with only a shard blade. And we will finish the part.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this episode was a little bit longer, but that was because we talked about the gods for so long. That's okay, though. I'm glad that you caught on to stuff like that. I'm sitting with so much behind-the-scenes information that I'm just like, I really want to be able to talk about some of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
I want to be able to talk about honor and odium and cultivation.
But nope.
Nope, I can't. And don't forget, cultivation is on this planet as well. They mentioned that.
Yeah. Is the Night Watcher one of the 16?
No. The Night Watcher is more similar, and they'll explain exactly what I mean by this later in this book. The Night Watcher is more similar to the Stormfather.
Oh, so it's a powerful being, but it's specific to this world.
Yes, and it is associated with a specific shard on this world, but it is not a shard. The Stormfather is associated with honor, And the Night Watcher is associated with cultivation.
You said with a specific shard.
Oh, did I say shard?
Yes.
Yeah.
With a specific god?
Yeah, shard and god are interchangeable.
They're really not.
In this world, they are.
That doesn't make sense.
The gods are called shards.
Okay.
By anybody that is Cosmere aware.
Okay.
They would refer to the gods as shards.
So shard blades.
Yes, shard blades. There is a connection there. It might not be as big a connection as you're thinking, but there's definitely a... it's not a accident that they're named shard blades. I mean,
or shard plate.
Yeah,
or
no.
Shard
stuff. I can kind of give you an answer to this. It's really because the people that named it originally were the Knights Radiant, right? Mm-hmm. And they were not super Cosmere aware, but they were aware of honor, at least. Like, they knew about shards. So
they're not... They're just named after the gods. They're not actually, like, from them. Like, the way that the Honor Blades are.
Yeah, they're named after them. There is more connection there that we'll get into by the end of this book. You will know exactly... You will know the history of the Shard Blades by the end of this book.
For the Honor Blades, you don't necessarily have to swear an oath to get power from them, but... Well, I guess you don't really have to do that for Shard Blades either.
Well, you don't get powers from Shard Blades.
In order to get, like, magic power, you have to swear oaths.
Yeah. The Honor Blades come directly from Honor to the Heralds.
So how blades did wielded Zeph by get the one?
That is a question that I think is also answered by the end of this book.
Is it?
I think they mention... I think so. I think.
Is there anyone else that is not a Herald that currently has an Honor Blade?
It sounds like Amaram's trying to get one.
Well,
he's trying to get
Tom's. Okay, that's true. Well, because Amaram was saying that Tom was saying that there's like a hidden cache of shard blades.
I will remind you
but
that.
But I thought that was shard blades, not honor blades.
Well, yeah. So, Borden, the guy that retrieved Tom, said that Tom said that there was a cache of shard blades. But I will say, in any POV that we've seen of somebody with Tawn, Tawn has never said that there is a cache of shard blades.
He said honor blade, did he?
No, he's never mentioned any blades.
Oh.
But then Borden said that at one point in the trip, it was mentioned to him.
So was he lying, or?
Who knows?
I mean, you know.
I do know. You'll find out the answer to that by the end of this book. Actually, pretty soon.
So, what if he's not... actually saying that, and Amaram just knows more than he's letting on, and he's using Talm as an excuse to get power.
If he's
aware that Talm is a Herald, obviously he would know that Talm either had an Honor Blade at one point or might possibly know where one is, and so that would make sense that he would want to use Talm to find a quote-unquote cache of shard blades.
I can tell you that of the Honor Blades, there are two that are not where they're supposed to be. Zeph has one. Zeph has Yezrian's because it makes him a Windrunner, and Yezrian was the patron of the Windrunners.
Okay, where's Yezrian?
Where is Yezrian? That's a good question. You've actually seen Yezrian in the books, but I never pointed it out because it's a reveal later. Yezrian has been around.
There was also the two heralds at the banquet.
But remember, they don't have their shard blades or their honor blades. They left them behind.
Oh wait, by where they're not supposed to be, you mean in the place where they left them?
And yeah.
So there would be nine of. There should be nine of them there, but
yes.
There's only seven of them there. So that means Tom would still presumably have his, and then they're. Zeph has one, and then someone else has one.
Yeah, there are two people that have honor blades that should not. Is what I will narrow that down to.
Would that whole search be trying to find where all the other honor blades are then? Like, where they're resting?
Oh, I think that's definitely what Amaram is looking for.
Oh.
He's looking for the rest of the honor blades.
Oh, okay.
Zeph has one of the honor blades, and somebody else has an honor blade that is not supposed to have one. And I will be able to give you, I won't be able to fill in all the answers on that one, but pretty soon I'll be able to point out how we know that somebody has one that shouldn't. I'll say we actually don't know who has this honor blade, but we know that some, in a few episodes, I'll be able to tell you why we know that somebody has it that shouldn't. But we know that there's an honor blade that is in the wrong place, but we're not entirely sure what happened to it.
Oh, okay. That's confusing.
It is confusing. Once I'm able to explain it more, it will make sense. And I'll be able to explain it more, like, in 2 weeks. Or in, like, a week.
Okay. Now I'm just trying to think, like... So we don't know who it is, but there's clues so far that prove that it's not where it's supposed to be.
Do you mean in what we've covered or in the books?
Like, in what we've covered.
In what we covered, the clue hasn't popped up yet, but it's about to.
So we couldn't have figured it out even if we tried.
No. And I don't think there's any clues as to where it actually is. Just the clue that it's not where it's supposed to be is going to pop up in a minute. Like, I have no idea where the honor blade is. I don't even have a theory? I know one character that had it at one point, but Sanderson said they no longer have it.
They had it, but no longer do.
Yes.
Okay.
And so I have no idea where it could have gone from there.
Is the person who had it but no longer does someone we know?
Yes.
Or have seen?
Yeah.
Did someone have it before then that wasn't supposed to have it?
It was where it was supposed to be before then.
So someone we know freaking took it and then lost it?
It was where it was supposed to be, and then somebody else had it, and then now it's missing.
That's infuriating.
Yeah, in a week, I will be able to explain exactly what happened.
Wait.
What's up?
Does it have something to do with why Dalinar doesn't remember his wife?
No, it's much more recent than that.
Oh. Okay. Are we ever going to find that out?
Why he doesn't remember his wife?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think you can kind of figure it out. I mean, didn't he mention that he went to the Night Watcher in the last book?
Well,
yeah.
I know it's because of that. I just don't know what
he gave up. You don't know why? Okay, yeah.
I don't know if he gave up his wife for something.
Yeah.
If he purposely gave up his wife for something, or if he was just looking for something and his wife was taken away from him because of it.
Yeah, that will be answered in Oathbringer. The Oathbringer will answer everything about.
Also, does Adolin remember his mom?
He does, but I think he was pretty young when she died.
Oh. Because I don't know if he's ever mentioned her.
I think he's mentioned her offhandedly once or twice, but not a ton. She's been dead for a while.
Yeah.
He was born in 1150, and she would have died in...
Was Dalinar a drunk because he doesn't remember his wife? Or because of what he did or something? But then his brother died, and now he's like, oh, I should like not be like that anymore.
Dalinar definitely has trauma that led to him drinking. Dalinar was also not a great guy before he started drinking.
I know.
So
that means that both Dalinar and his brother were both terrible people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And
Dalinar and Gavilar were both terrible people.
Navani liked Dalinar more than Gavilar, but was scared of Dalinar more than Gavilar, so she married Gavilar. But their relationship was not good. They were both terrible people. And everyone liked Dalinar's wife.
Yes. Dalinar's wife was one of the nicest people you could ever really meet.
How did she end up with Dalinar?
They will answer that in Oathbringer. I mean, I can tell you it's not a big deal. I can tell you it's political in nature.
Okay.
Dalinar was outwardly kind of fucked up, but he always had a decent heart. Gavilar hid his evilness.
Hmm.
Which is like, that's what, like, I mean, Navani's the only one so far that's been like, yeah, he was an asshole. And Dalinar's like, I never saw that. Like, Gavilar wasn't a monster outwardly. Whereas
he was
Dalinar
good
was.
At playing it off.
Yeah, Dalinar was a monster outwardly, whereas Gavilar was not.
So Dalinar was a terrible person on the outside, but he had good intentions. Meanwhile, Gavilar was a good person on the outside, but was actually terrible.
Good intentions might be stretching it a little bit, but he was definitely kinder hearted than Gavilar.
Okay. Yeah.
He's still a fucking warmongering Alethi, you know.
Well, yeah.
Soldier,
yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. And now he's like, let's not go to war.
Yeah.
Let's not.
He's grown.
That's like the worst thing we could do.
Yeah.
How about we make peace with these people that I started a genocide of.
But yeah, next week, like I said, Kaladin's going to fight a Chasm Fiend by himself. And also, I think next week is the last Shallan flashback. I don't believe there are any flashbacks in part 5.
Really?
Yes.
So we don't get any more of her story? After this.
I mean,
the last flashback, not the last part.
No. She also have chapters, but it's going to be the last flashback.
Is it going to be really, really depressing? Of course it is. Is it going to be when she killed her dad?
I was shocked when I read it. Not because what happens is surprising, but it just was like, I was like, oh god, this is fucking dark. Holy fuck.
Is it when she kills her dad? Or is that not till later?
I'll tell you on Thursday.
Tell me now.
If it's gonna happen in a flashback, the only time it could happen is on Thursday.
Well, yeah, but it could happen in another book.
There are no Shallan flashbacks in other books. We learn more about her backstory in other books, but not through flashbacks.
This is the last Shallan flashback ever.
Yeah, unless he decides to do more in another book.
Okay, so we find out how her dad dies. Okay, yeah. Cool.
More is said about her backstory in conversation and just like I'm realizing this thing about myself that I've repressed for a long time. But like, it's not like there are no more chapters that are like Shallan symbol 3 years ago, you know, like.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so this would be the most recent flashback because her dad hadn't been dead too long before the start of the books.
This is probably only like a year ago.
Yeah. Because it's already been like months and months and months since the beginning of the series, right?
Yeah. So guys, thanks so much for listening as always. If you want to, we have a Discord server. The link to join that is in the episode description, and also it is our pinned tweet on Twitter. You guys can follow us on Twitter at SpeakStormlight. You can email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. My music was done by at @alx_beegboy. That's at @alx_beegboi on Twitter. There will also be a link to there in the episode description. He is incredible, and he did incredible cover art. Yes, that's everything I've got for you guys. So until next time, Mango.
Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.